This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was the city's planning commissioner, David Reifman, who prior to joining the city administration has an interesting background. In addition to being a lawyer, he taught English as a second language in France for several years after he graduated from the University of Illinois. Commissioner Reifman's remarks focused on developments going on in the city. There's a lot happening, according to the commissioner. He talked about the Michael Reese site. He talked about Finkel Steel, the post office redevelopment, Children's Memorials redevelopment, and Roosevelt Road along the river south down to 18th Street. He also talked about a Neighborhood Opportunity Funds program that will be announced in the next day or two, where 32 underserved areas will be eligible to receive up to $3.2 million in grants. Over the next few weeks, the city plans to roll out some new housing programs in which seniors and veterans will join with neighborhood libraries in the same building. Commissioner Reifman talked about a great deal of transit-oriented development, affordable housing, investment in neighborhoods that would benefit from downtown investments, industrial modernization, which would result in numerous thousands of excellent, well-paying jobs, and waterfront development, plus the need for more open space. To give you an idea, he said, of what is happening in Chicago, the redevelopment of the Willis Tower will be over $500 million. That is about three times the cost of the original Sears Tower that was built between 1969 and 1974. In the neighborhoods, there will be millions of dollars poured into north, west, and south side areas that will be used for retail and commercial development, grocery stores, restaurants, cultural activities, and improved community services. The city, he says, has 26 industrial corridors and that there will be producing new tax revenues, thousands of permanent construction jobs and other permanent jobs, plus huge numbers and dollars of private investment, which will result in significant tax revenue to the city of Chicago and could be used for future improvements. Finally, Commissioner Reifman focused in on the river. The mayor sees it as a second frontier of Chicago, ripe for development. Currently on the North Branch, there's the UI Labs and the M-Hub, providing more than 2,000 jobs in this area, and some of this will be shifted to the south side and the South Branch of the river. Commissioner Reifman finished his remarks to an overflow crowd of almost 300 people by saying, "The strong downtown core results in more funds and initiatives available for redevelopment outside in the neighborhoods of Chicago, and this momentum will lead to an improved quality of life for all Chicagoans."
Ladies and gentlemen, Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Mayor?
Thank you, Jay. I was just telling Jay a little earlier at lunch, we were sitting down, that I just came from a meeting where we have, with the Council on Global Affairs for the City of Chicago, we have 15 mayors from around the world that are all here working together, talking about economic development, investing in our infrastructure, and how to create what I think is inclusive economic growth that advances our goals and is more opportune. They have another working lunch, but to be here, because a lot of the discussion there was about different financing models and different ways to drive economic growth that are happening in the city of Chicago. First of all, it's an honor to introduce David Reifman. I say that because I think he, when I asked him to join the administration after Andy, who was very successful in his role as commissioner of the Planning and Housing Department, David had a great set of skills coming from the private sector that I thought was important for the city to capture, having somebody with his knowledge of both the planning and development of major projects for the city of Chicago. Because at that point, one of the assignments I gave David was to take major parts of the city and parcels of the city that have all been dormant for years, what I would call is a drain on the city rather than a driver of job growth and economic development, and turn each of those into opportunities of not only job growth, economic development, but revenue for the city of Chicago. Last week, you know about the announcement on Michael Reese, but if you think about it in the last, in his tenure, Michael Reese, Finkel, the property on Roosevelt, the 60 acres there, Children's Memorial Hospital, and the post office. Every one of those projects to date, which is the only way we've allowed him now to come speak, because he's actually hit the check mark. But every one of he's on a work release program. To David's credit, and I don't think I thought it could have been done in the speed in which he's done it. But if you look at every one of those projects, every one of them, for years, were sitting, decades in some cases, sitting dormant. The post office, and they were all eyesores, and they were never ever achieving, in my view, the potential that they can contribute to the city's job growth, economic development, and overall well-being. The post office, Children's Memorial, Finkel site, the property on Roosevelt, as well as Michael Reese, are all now moving in ways that we couldn't imagine just literally 2 years ago, although for the last couple decades, they were empty or dormant or not really functioning at the greatest capacity for the city of Chicago. The second task I asked them to do was to see how we can make sure that the economic development for the city of Chicago was actually also not just happening in our central business district, so we were not in an either-or situation, but an and situation. And tomorrow we will make the announcement of the first ever of our Neighborhood Opportunity Fund announcements. 32 businesses across the city of Chicago in our community and our neighborhoods will receive $3.2 million in grants. And it's a unique strategy. In fact, to the mayors that were all here, as we were talking about interesting different types of financing, one of the things I mentioned was the NOF, the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund. So as there is growth in our central business district, it becomes the seed capital for restaurants, grocery stores, cultural institutions that make up and are landmarks in our neighborhood economy throughout the city of Chicago. And that was an innovation that David brought. You'll see the first down payment of it tomorrow. And then third,
thank you.
What a coincidence. The former assessor led that applause. Third was something I'm extremely excited about, and we'll be going to Planning Commission in the next day or two, next week or so, is our co-location strategy. And it is two of the projects is to bring public housing, veterans and senior housing, with a neighborhood library in the actual building. So there'll be a project in which you have housing with seniors and or veterans in the cases of these two projects with neighborhood libraries done and designed by world-renowned architects from the city of Chicago. So our architecture that we all love and admire for the city and everybody that comes to it talks about how beautiful our architecture is. So Skidmore, Owings, Roden, and others who are world-renowned architects in the space here in the city of Chicago that do work around the globe will now be doing landmark, great projects in both public housing with a neighborhood library component. And I think when you look back at David's tenure in the last 2 years, what he has accomplished for the city, you can check those milestones by things like I talked about what's happening at the post office or Finkel, talk about what I just said about the libraries, but also what with the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund. But he has brought from the private sector a zest for public life and the public good that I think only can come from somebody who grew up in Chicago, went to a neighborhood high school like Sullivan, has accomplished so much, but has desired to leave that behind and give so much back. David Reichman.
Well, good afternoon. Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Jay. I'll try to live up to that introduction. I'm glad to be back here. It was about a year ago that I came and spoke to City Club about what we were trying to do And today, I'd like to take time to look back on some of the accomplishments the mayor referenced, as well as look forward to what I think we can do in the next year or two. And what I'd like to do in the way I've structured this presentation is I want to tell a story. And I think I don't think we see this story of Chicago kind of told in one cohesive manner, and that's my goal today is to present it in a particular way. And I hope to underscore several central themes here, but primarily, while we continue to address our significant challenges in terms of fiscal issues and education and public safety, we are achieving significant positive results that are strengthening Chicago and helping to address those very challenges. We have literally tens of billions of dollars in new investment, tens of thousands of new jobs, and hundreds of millions of dollars in new taxes and revenue that are resulting from our efforts. At the same time, we're developing innovative and pioneering programs to fully leverage those market strengths, maximize the impact of our public investments, and create equitable development opportunities for our underinvested and challenged neighborhoods. Under the mayor's leadership, the concept of equity has been key to our policies, programs, and initiatives. And while we have a lot of work to do, we are making consistent progress to address those issues. Now, from my perspective, this narrative needs to be presented as a coherent vision of growth, change, and equity. And I believe we are making progress on changing the trajectory here in Chicago such that our neighborhood investments and opportunities are increasingly inclusive. When I was here last year, I spoke about the false dichotomy between downtown versus neighborhoods and how we as a city need to recognize and address that. And the reality is that our downtown core continues to grow and expand, which increases our ability to accomplish numerous objectives at the same time. It helps attract 21st century jobs to the city, including the major development sites that ring the central area, especially along the river. It helps us to invest in weaker markets and make them neighborhoods of choice. And it helps our ability to create new resources that support businesses, affordable housing, jobs, education, and public safety. Now, the key tools and themes that I'll address today, and I'm just warning you, this is a little bit long, but I'll try to keep it interesting, and I talk fast, so hopefully it won't have too many lulls. But some of the key themes are like our affordable requirements ordinance, which provides for more economically diverse neighborhoods, transit-oriented development, which creates more sustainable neighborhoods, and I'll talk about some of the leverage models that the mayor began referring to, the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund, which levels the playing field for our commercial development in underserved neighborhoods, Retail Thrive Zones, which is another program that brings new resources to local entrepreneurs, and other innovative leverage models, including our Industrial Corridor Modernization Initiative, to bring our industrial land use policies into the 21st century. And this leverage concept, I think, is one of the key innovations that we have developed under the mayor in this second term. And another key theme is what I called it last year the Big Six. You remember the mayor, you know, when he asked me to do the job, he said, well, I got three big projects, and how are those four going? And I want to know about the five. So it's a euphemism because it's way more than six. I really have no idea how many projects it actually is. It changes on a daily basis. But the Finkel site, the old post office, the 62 acres, the Michael Reese site, I'll spend a little time talking about them and how I think they tie into the bigger vision of how they work comprehensively to generate resources that are critical to housing, retail, industrial development in our neighborhoods throughout the city, such as Englewood and Woodlawn and North Lawndale, Garfield Park, Pullman, and so many others. So this is a bit of a whirlwind tour, and I'm trying to make it as comprehensive as I can, and I assure you that this is really even only skimming the surface of all the things that we're doing. Now, before I get into it, I just want to take a moment to recognize the great collaboration that we have at the city in our leadership team, both at the Department of Planning and Development. There are numerous members here, and we have a tremendous team that works on these things. But we also work collectively with sister agencies and departments like CTA, CDOT, Commissioner Sheinfeld is here, Department of Buildings, the Mayor's Office, the Park District. All of us are working together to be Deputy Mayor Zopp, I see you, and all of these things to work together to really kind of achieve these results as a city. So that said, let's begin the tour, and we begin with transportation, public transit, and access to jobs. And, of course, we start with O'Hare, which is the lifeblood of our economy. It brings 77 million people through the airport every year, employing hundreds of thousands of Chicago residents. We have two recently completed runways, a third runway scheduled to open in 2020 with 13 new gates, and a 4.5 million square foot new multimodal facility to house all of the ground transportation in one center. The mayor also launched a two-year effort this spring to pursue express train service from downtown to downtown in O'Hare to cut travel time to 20 minutes and help Chicago compete on a global stage with cities like Toronto, London, Hong Kong, and Tokyo. And we also have Midway Airport, another airport, international airport, with access to rapid transit, which two international airports give us a unique competitive advantage with respect to the global economy. Now, our focus on the local transit is a critical element to our growth strategy as well, and the economic impact is substantial. And under the mayor's, since the mayor took office, we have done a lot on three new stations at Madison and Wabash near Millennium Park, Morgan and Lake and Fulton Market, Cermak and Michigan by McCormick Place. Each one of these stations costs about $50 million, and we've had billions of dollars of investment from our $50 million investment and the returns that we see on making investments like that. The newest station we recently announced was at Lake and Damon on the Near West Side. It will serve businesses in the Kinsey Industrial Corridor, visitors to the United Center, and nearby residents, including the Chicago Housing Authority. And in case you think he only beats up on me, you can ask Rebecca about how the station is going when we're done. But it fills, most importantly, it fills a 1.5-mile gap of Green Line stations between California and Ashland. And when we launched this, Alderman Burnett talked about it as a social justice issue. And again, I think you can see that that distance, especially in relationship to the old Henry Horner homes and the redevelopment of that area, this now gives access to parts of our city that did not have access before. And in the mayor's first term, we undertook a $425 million project on the Red Line South reconstruction on the Dan Ryan, replaced 10 miles of track between Cermak and 95th Street. Not only does it shave 20 minutes off of the trip to and from downtown, but it provides opens up access to jobs in the downtown core to a whole area of our city and population that did not have that level of service. And continuing on this, last year we created the first transit TIF to allow us to match federal funds, a $1 billion federal grant for a $2 billion first phase of the red and purple line modernizations. All new tracks and signals with rehabilitated stations at Lawrence, Argyle, Berwyn, and Bryn Mawr, a $600 million bypass at Belmont, which improves the entire red line and brown line for the system as a whole. Now, this is a transit-specific TIF. It was a unique statute that was developed that we implemented in record time to be used solely for transportation improvements. And then continuing on, our investment in transit continues in various ways, but also the proposed $2 billion extension south of the Red Line to 95th Street, from 95th Street to 130th Street from the terminal we just recently opened, and we put in $75 million in preliminary engineering announced by the CTA. Now, all of this gives us the opportunity to focus on some of the things my department does more specifically, like transit-oriented development. And while we have, in 2013, the city adopted a transit-oriented development ordinance, it was updated in 2015, and I think we look at it, amongst other ways, as a philosophy and an approach to development where we focus on transit and increase height and density and other development rights, and most importantly, allow for reduction in parking almost to 100% if it's demonstrated. And these projects have already generated about $1.5 billion in construction activity since these ordinances were approved by the City Council. Last week, we announced our largest transit-oriented development, which is Union Station. Now, Union Station is almost like O'Hare. It accommodates 120,000 passengers daily. It's a $1 billion project, at least, to improve passenger circulation, create new full and part-time jobs, as well as to further expand TOD opportunities and investment in the West Loop, retail, residential, office. It's a major project for the city and something that we will look to move forward very quickly in the next year. That's one of the big six, which is about 15. So these are downtown. We're also focusing on how transit can work in our neighborhoods as well. And this, a few weeks ago, a month ago, we broke ground on Woodlawn Station near the 63rd and Cottage Grove Green Line stop, a 70 mixed income apartment project made possible through city loans, working in cooperation with POA, Preservation of Affordable Housing, on the site of the former Grove Park apartment complex. And in addition to what we're doing here with this development, it has 15,000 square feet of retail, is improvements working with CTA on this particular L-stop. So again, to give the benefits of transit and improved transit to all the residents in the city here in Woodlawn. Just south of this site is the Strand Hotel, which was overseen by Johnson & Lee Architects, which we sold to Holston for a dollar, put in numerous resources. Again, just the other side of the L at 63rd and Cottage. And this is now a senior living, again, putting energy and vitality into the neighborhood. And I'll return to this theme of Woodlawn a couple times as we move through it. Now, back downtown, again, just to give you more of the sense of the confidence of the markets and the economy in Chicago as we see them. On Michigan Avenue, and we see, you know, part of the narrative here is how we see things moving south, and I'll hit on that numerous times. But last year, we set a post-recession record with 50 cranes operating in the city. That's an amazing number. Commissioner Friedland, Department of Buildings, has a responsibility for moving these things out and advancing that part of our agenda. But you see here that in working with historic resources and working with our maybe our most important landmark district, how we were able to come up with appropriate but significant residential projects. And again, going back to the mayor's emphasis on design, a 76-story tower at 1200 South Indiana designed by Rafael Vignoli, 1000 South Michigan, another tower designed by Helmut Jahn, 800 South Michigan, which includes the Essex Hotel renovation and a new apartment tower. All of these are in progress. All of these are under construction with tremendous confidence in the residential market and the future of our city. Most importantly, perhaps, is the largest residential project right now in River East, which is the Vista Tower, the city's first $1 billion new construction project, 95 stories, world's tallest building designed by a woman architect, Chicago's Jeannie Gang, expected to open in 2019. We are seeing a $500 million reinvestment in Willis Tower, which, in case you didn't know, is three times more than it cost to build the original Sears Tower. So 300,000 square feet, prices have gone up, 300,000 square feet of new retail and dining, and, again, the biggest commercial boom in 25 years in Chicago. And, again, the resurgence of office. Numerous office buildings, 151 North Franklin, 130 North Franklin, 150 North Riverside, a 1.2 million square foot development by John O'Donnell with 1.5 acres of open space, 444 West Lake developed by Hines, another million square foot building with 1.5 acres of open space. And then the largest office project that we've approved this year is at 110 North Wacker, 800 feet tall, 1.3 million square feet, the tallest pure office building in downtown since 1990. And Bank of America, as you know, announced that they're consolidating their operations here in 500,000 square feet, which assures that this building will actually get built. Now, with this snapshot of our market strength, I want to turn to how we have been redefining and rethinking how we are equitably extending the benefits of this type of growth to other parts of the city. And we begin with what we talked about a year ago. A year ago, the city adopted a new downtown bonus system. And as you'll recall, the purpose of this really is to shift the benefit of increased growth and value to our underserved neighborhoods. So as you know, previously downtown downtown zoning had a base zoning, and you could get bonuses to add height and density to your projects based on what I call a hodgepodge of various on-site amenities, arcades, winter gardens, water features, upper-level setbacks, things that primarily benefited the private project, but in my estimation and the mayor's estimation had limited public benefits. We took the bones of that system and redesigned it to, we can still achieve design excellence through these things because everything comes through as a plan development, so we're able to have a lot of say in terms of what gets constructed. But we came up with a new concept called the Neighborhood Opportunity Bonus. And from that, we take a single payment per square foot and we allocate it into three pools. One, 80% of it goes into neighborhood economic development for underinvested neighborhoods. 10% goes into a citywide Adopt a Landmark Fund, which we never had before. We always only focused on downtown landmarks. We just launched this component of our fund last week. And a local impact fund where 10% of the money stays in the area of the project. And I'll talk a little bit about that as well in a bit to show you the results that we're seeing from this project. At the same time we did that, we continued to look at development trends in the city. And we look, you know, what you see outlined in black were the outlines of the downtown zoning area as determined in 2004. But we continued to see data and zoning applications and other things that look to push
the boundaries of downtown beyond its traditional or ordinance areas. So we decided to expand that to the area shown in red, all areas that are qualified for downtown zoning by virtue of their high intensity and density of development, proximity to thousands of jobs, abundance of goods and services, access to multiple train lines, and so forth. So all of these projects that we're seeing come in right now have been generating funds for the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund, and we have seen more than a dozen projects since this was adopted a year ago with over $1.4 billion of value come through. Now, I will tell you that when I was here last year, I estimated that we would get about $10 million a year. To date, 1 year later, we are already in queue for $30 million for the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund. It only gets paid at permit, but these things are approved in process, and I expect to see these come in. These are two projects, McDonald's headquarters in the West Loop, which contributed $4 million, and the 110 North Wacker project, which I just talked about that got approved, which by itself will contribute $19 million to the fund. These are additional projects that we've approved in the last year, Nobu Hotel and others, that have all contributed to this fund. So now we're at the point where we've gotten these resources. Let's talk about the impact of what these resources and how we can use them. And these are the areas that where the neighborhood fund can be spent. These are areas called qualified investment areas. You can see the criteria under which we articulated their boundaries. We opened a round earlier this year for applications. We received more than 800 applications for funds of various amounts. And as the mayor said, we'll be announcing the first 32 winners tomorrow in terms of their impacts throughout the commercial areas of what's shown in blue here. And priority, just so you understand, for these projects are those that can have a positive catalytic impact in their neighborhoods, provide goods or services where those goods or services are lacking, and can support new or expanding small business. So this is our first success with this. I think there's a lot more success to come, but we don't stop with that. We also announced a program that's a TIF-based program, a SBIF program, Small Business Improvement Fund. The mayor announced a new Retail Thrive Zone initiative, which further supports these goals of investment in those communities that need it. Working with local stakeholders and partners in key areas, we allocated $9 million in grants of up to $250,000 each. But as importantly, we also have a new web portal which makes it easier for these businesses to get property tax reductions like 7C. We have we have arranged with banking partners and other lenders to get bridge loans for these businesses since they don't have access to capital that can be paid back when the projects are complete with the SBIF funds that we allocate. And a third component is working with Acción. We developed a way to access operating funds so that these businesses could operate without having to resort to things like predatory lending. So Thrive Zone grants will be structured much like the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund, and between the Retail Thrive and Neighborhood Opportunity projects, we'll have about $20 million ready to go this summer for businesses in our underserved neighborhoods. Now, many of these projects so far are small projects, and I want to talk about the additional impact that things like the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund can have. Now, these are not Neighborhood Opportunity Fund projects, but these are projects that we fund through various sources that have similar types of impacts in their neighborhood, and as we generate more funds, we can use those resources more and more. One of them is the brand-new proposed Jewel Osco, full-service Jewel Osco at 61st and Cottage. Again, just two blocks south, north of the area we just talked about in terms of the corner of 63rd, and Cottage, 40,000 feet, 200 jobs, being located across the street from another project, Metro Squash, $7 million project we put in, which provides youth with squash and wellness programming, academic tutoring, mentoring, and life skills through Cottage. And again, ties in with all the things I previously mentioned, like Woodlawn Station, the Strand Hotel, improvements to CTA, another project across the street called Trinon Lofts. These are the types of things that we'll continue to fund in strategic ways using our public investments with private investments to maximize community development. Now, this is the Stony Island Arts Bank. The reason I show you is that part of the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund and part of our priorities in terms of community development deal with culture and arts. And this is obviously one of the finest, if not the finest, example of a project we collaborated with the Astor Gates. We gave the property for a dollar. But again, culture, arts, how we use those to anchor and expand opportunity for neighborhoods is critically important. Now, going on, one of the mayor's top priorities and his personal commitment and efforts were tied into the development of this Whole Foods at 63rd and Halsted. You know, Whole Foods can be all over the city in various neighborhoods. They should be in a neighborhood like this as well. That has been the mayor's approach from the beginning. We put $10 million into this in TIF. It's the type of project, the type of big project we would want to support with neighborhood opportunity. And I put here just a quick link to a story. It's not a link, but you can go look at it. The DNA Info did on Monday about how phenomenal the impact is as a community anchor 8 months after it opened. The employees are almost entirely from the area. Neighborhood pricing and merchandising are working. People love this store. And it also sells products by entrepreneurs in the neighborhood. It gives them an outlet from what they have been able to produce there to sell in the Whole Foods. So that's some of our efforts on commercial. So now I'm going to shift gears to what else we've been working on this year, our industrial modernization efforts. And in the mayor's second term priorities report, and when he spoke to me about taking this job, he indicated that one of the key priorities was what we do with industrial modernization. The city has, as you can see on this map, you don't have to count them, I'll tell you, it's 26 industrial corridors, more than half of which have planned manufacturing district, a very restrictive zoning category for industrial use. And I touched on what we were going to do last year when I was here, and we spoke a little bit about some of our goals to allow boundary changes that include land appropriate for industry and exclude land that has potential for other uses, with more mixed-use development in select corridors to accommodate central area expansion and 21st century jobs. But we've also looked at how we can use this leverage model here as well, and how we can take value from what we're going to unleash in certain areas to create value in other areas of the city that may not see that result. And our assessment of what this effort will lead to, and I'll read it because I think it's so important. Billions of dollars in new and private investment, hundreds of millions of dollars in new tax revenues, tens of millions of dollars in new revenue to support both local improvements in the area, but citywide economic development as well. Tens of thousands of permanent and construction jobs, unprecedented open space improvements, and critical transportation enhancements. So I'm going to spend just a couple minutes on the North Branch because it has been such a focus for so many years in the city. I want to give you a quick overview of what we did and where we are. But this is the North Branch as we found it. 25 years ago, this corridor was nearly 80% manufacturing. Today, manufacturing land use is only 20% of the corridor. And the jobs numbers have followed a similar trend, a fall off in manufacturing. There are only 1,500 traditional manufacturing jobs in the 750 acres that comprise the North Branch, but a huge spike in business services, IT, and management. So we worked on a plan, which was adopted by the Plan Commission last month and is moving to City Council over the summer, which recommends changing the PMD zoning in two of the areas, keeping it in the middle. And from this, we believe employment could conceivably triple. We'll allow more residential and amenities in the area, more open space, and better connectivity. And I think, again, from my perspective, you look at the historical way zoning addressed industrial. You had industrial here, you had residential here, commercial here, very separate and apart. The 21st century economy doesn't really look at it that way. It's a mixed-use, amenity-rich, live-work-play type of environment that attracts lots of jobs. And we followed models in Seattle and Boston and other places to come up with our own approach to how this should work. So in addition to some rezonings that will reset the baseline for other development that can occur, we've also looked at transit with short, medium, and long-term improvements with more than a dozen critical infrastructure projects, including continued work on existing vehicular bridges, new pedestrian bridges, trail connections, and a possible light rail corridor through the middle through existing right-of-way. This exists today. We can take advantage of that. It's not a pipe dream to be able to move transportation up into this area. Now, open space is another critical component of what we're trying to do. 60 acres of open space in this area involving new trails, wetlands, recreational fields along the river. And I'm just going to take 1 second to reemphasize the mayor's commitment to the river. The river has become a central focus of what we're doing under Mayor Emanuel, not just in terms of the Riverwalk, but you can see all the attention that we're going to give to the river here on the North Branch. And as I work through the presentation, I'll talk a little bit more about what we're trying to do on the South Branch, because the vision is really of what we can do with the river as a second frontier of development and growth in the city as we move forward. This is the C.H. Robinson site in the North Branch, and the reason I show this is that this is an example of the type of new development that we would want to see in this area. But again, what's critically important is I told you there were 1,500 industrial jobs remaining in the 750 acres in the North Branch. There are 2,000 jobs in this facility alone. So you see the potential for job growth that we have in this area. We've invested in institutions like the Digital Manufacturing and Design Innovation Institute at UI Labs and EbHub on Chicago Avenue, two facilities leading the way forward for advanced manufacturing in Chicago and the country that are first-of-their-kind manufacturing facilities helping U.S. factories build more efficiently, and both are providing resources and best practices. So for those of you that don't know what this is Finkel, and that's what it looks like today. So critically important to understand the thinking of what we're trying to do here is understanding that Finkel Steel moved to the Burnside Industrial Corridor. They remained in the city, but they left this part of the city. And that's one of the things we're looking to do as these businesses move out of area. They found an area that was much more suitable for their business. We want to keep these businesses in the city, but we also want to realize the potential of a site like Finkel for 21st century jobs-rich mixed-use environment. Right across the river is the fleet and facilities management site that we own that is for sale. Bids are due June 14th. Let's go. So similarly, we'll play into our framework plan that we adopted at the Plan Commission. So I want to talk a little bit about how we've taken this kind of concept of leverage. We started with Neighborhood Opportunity Fund and advanced it in the industrial context. And so we had various principles of funding where we want to create new tools and reduce the need for TIF. I don't think we can eliminate the need for TIF, but reduce our need for TIF for infrastructure, enhance the jobs and tax base, and also create value on a citywide basis. The idea being is as assessed value increases in the North Branch, which it will, we are able to take a portion of that value and shift it throughout the city to other industrial corridors, thus helping them to increase the assessed valuation in other parts of the city as well. And we're going to do this through a couple different tools. The first tool that we've announced in the framework plan that will start moving through City Council is a new industrial system corridor fee. And because you remember the PMD remains in the middle area, this will be applicable to transition in the north and south areas. It will be triggered upon a rezoning of property out of industrial classification. And then the fee, we think, will generate tens of millions of dollars, 100% of which will go into receiving corridors throughout the city to support industrial development. And I'll show you the types of examples of what we'll want to do. But it can support infrastructure, environmental, acquisition of industrial property, building rehab. The idea being is that we lose industrial property in one part of our city, we need to compensate for it in the entirety of the industrial ecosystem. And this is one of the ways that we can do this. Another tool we're inventing in the north part is a local bonus that will apply only to the north part of the branch. And this will allow us to achieve a certain amount of density along the lines of what we do downtown, but use it primarily for infrastructure in the area that we will need to make this work. And in the south part as it transitions, this will go into the downtown area. If you look at the maps today and our maps, this is the hole in the donut, and this is an area that could go into downtown zoning, and again, will be part of the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund itself, generating potentially tens of millions of dollars to support those activities I just described. Now, we use this leverage model in numerous different ways. So, this is the neighborhoods they'll go to. So when we take 2FM from its site in North and Troop, we're going to move it and relocate it to Englewood, to 67th and Wentworth, paying for this transition, moving both all the 250 jobs that are there, as well as 2FM's headquarters there, as well as providing the opportunity for additional retail, which our investment will hopefully encourage in that area to create a certain amount of leverage. So the purchase price for the site in the North Branch, bids due June 14th, will help pay for this relocation, upgrades to our 311 system, and other neighborhood projects, depending on how much we realize. Now, the type of projects that we want to support with this fee are things like this project at Roosevelt and Costner, a 21-acre vacant city-owned property that is now zoned for three building, 320,000 square foot industrial campus and retail, where construction could begin later this year. The Whole Foods Distribution Center in Pullman. Whole Foods is moving its distribution center from Munster, Indiana. Again, the mayor's personal commitment to getting this project in Chicago, shifting its operations to a 150,000 square foot warehouse in Pullman, where we're using $8 million in TIF. We will now have another resource to attract these types of jobs. That's being located right next to the Method Soap factory where the city invested $8 million in TIF. Again, something else where we can find a new tool to invest, which also includes Gotham Greens on the roof, which distributes, you know, green products throughout the Whole Foods system. So again, you can see in Pullman as another example, more than $225 million in public and private investments recently completed or underway. There are 4,700 jobs in the area, which is up 10% from 2015. And again, we're not just throwing darts. We're trying to be strategic, and we look at how we locate things to be as effective on community as we possibly can. So we have other things that we build on, like the Pullman National Monument in this area. And we also see the location of things like the CSR Saifeng America facility, which will build CTA rail cars. So that's a quick snapshot of industrial. But I'm not done. I'm sorry. I got a little bit more. We have housing, and I think we need to talk about housing for a bit as well. And in 2013, the city council adopted the mayor's five-year housing plan, which is directing $1.3 billion in public spending to create, improve, and preserve more than 41,000 family units. We are about halfway through 41,000 units, not all family units. We're about halfway through the plan, and there are three primary ways that we support this goal. One way is through the traditional housing support, such as low-income housing tax credits, loans, land write-downs. Another is through our new and improved affordable requirements ordinance, and yet another are our innovative partnerships with the Chicago Housing Authority. And on this slide, you see some of the traditional projects like the King Legacy apartments in North Lawndale. And a lot of these projects use the tool called the low-income housing tax credits. Now, we recently, in the last month or so, revised our criteria for allocation of the credits to more efficiently prioritize our housing goals, especially to bring balance in areas called opportunity areas and transitioning areas, downtown and other changing areas, along with our investments in low to moderate income areas, and to foster investment in single room occupancy and other mixed income types of projects. So one new idea that we have, and I think it builds on the old new homes program, is a pilot for public safety employees like police, firemen, and paramedics, where we will provide up to $30,000 in purchase price assistance from the Affordable Housing Opportunity Fund as long as the home is in one of 10 targeted neighborhoods, Auburn Gresham, East Garfield, Englewood, Roseland, North Lawndale, 10 of them. And the purpose is twofold: to foster home ownership, and to stabilize neighborhoods by encouraging middle-class investment by individuals who are already dedicated to the safety and health of their communities. We expect 100 buyers to participate. Another project that I think we're particularly proud of is La Casa Norte in Humboldt Park, 25 units of affordable housing for formerly homeless residents, coupled with a teen center, food pantry, teaching kitchen, and health and wellness center, which we supported through numerous mechanisms. Now, another community I want to shift to, starting with housing, is Bronzeville. And these are where we have spent also additional time, and we're experiencing significant positive growth and change. Some of these projects, you can see Rosenwald, Shops and Lofts, have brought a critical mass of activity to the Bronzeville area. And these are our investments, but they're coupled with additional investments that we've had, such as a new Mariano's grocery store at 39th and King, fieldhouse improvements at Williams Park, library upgrades at Chicago B, the 35th Street pedestrian bridge, and a new bridge that CDOT and the mayor began work on this week at 41st Street, increasing access to the lake, increasing the integration of all of our communities at physical space so that everyone has access to the type of amenities that communities want and need. Now, another way that we generate funds for this, these are a bunch of projects in Uptown which generate funds in addition to housing for the Affordable Requirements Ordinance. I won't spend a lot of time on this, but it was adopted in 2007 and amended in 2015. And the 2007 ordinance generated about $10 million a year for affordable housing projects. The new ARO 2015 is estimated to generate about $20 million. And the 2007 ARO created about 30 units in market projects a year. The new one in 2015 will generate about 135 a year. Another way we work on housing issues is through Plan for Transformation and mixed income housing projects with our relationship with the Chicago Housing Authority. And just again, the magnitude of investment at public and private levels here. This is Cabrini Green Phase 1, an almost $200 million project with 480 units of mixed income housing, open space, and retail. Ickes, Cermak and State, a $300 million mixed-income project with 850 mixed-income rental and for-sale units and retail and community uses. Lathrop, which is planned on closing later this month, $170 million first phase to support 1,200 units of mixed-income using TIF with open space and, again, along the river. And then, to the mayor's point, what he discussed is our project with CHA and the libraries. We're introducing it this month. It's going to Plan Commission next month. You won't see it on the agenda next week. But it is moving very, very quickly, these two. And again, this is another creative way to leverage public land and resources for community. The interesting thing to us, amongst others, is the design competition that we manage for this project. We talk about projects by Vignoli in the Michigan Avenue District. Well, we should be also talking about John Ronan projects in our neighborhoods, who is a runner-up for the Obama Center architecture, Perkins and Will, and Skidmore, Owings and Merrill, which is the architect of the award-winning Chinatown Library. Now, we are also doing other things with our investments in other areas, and this is a new Near West library that we're putting in the Fulton Market area. This is one of the projects where we will contribute some of the neighborhood opportunity, the local component of the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund, where we're seeing all this growth and development so that we can create the kind of facilities that allow that kind of growth and development to occur. That's from the local impact fee. Yet another creative approach we're taking to leveraging public and private resources. We are doing a deal with the owner of property and the developer surrounding our firehouse at Dearborn in Illinois. And the city will receive a $20 million state-of-the-art firehouse paid for by the developer, $5 million contribution to our corporate fund, as well as a $10 million payment to the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund. All of these things effectively at no cost to the city, but using the model of what we have in terms of the resources and the land that we have. Now, shifting a little bit to our five-year housing plan, back to it, I want to talk for a moment about our $1 large lots program. 9,000 vacant lots zoned for residential use in Chicago, and the purpose is to foster land ownership in our disinvested neighborhoods, enhance community cohesion and sense of place. We've had 2,000 applications for more than 4,000 lots made available earlier this year in 33 community areas. These lots are available for $1, and we've been assessing the impact of this with a study with the U.S. Forest Service and the University of Illinois, finding that more than half of people live directly adjacent to their purchased lots, and although anecdotal at this point, buyers are reporting more community cohesion, social interaction, and quieter and safer streets. Focusing on open space in our neighborhoods, we talk about the 606, but we're also focused on doing things like the Englewood Loop, which is part of our Green Healthy Neighborhoods plan for Englewood and Greater Englewood, 4 miles of elevated trains where we've begun engineering and other studies to move that along. And, of course, the planned work on the Paseo, which has opportunities for multi-general gathering spots, community gardens, art and cultural institutions. Again, more complicated, it's access to the river because of its location in the middle of an industrial corridor, but we're looking for those opportunities to provide access to the south branch of the river. So the river, again, I want to talk about that for a few minutes given its importance. And the mayor sees the river as our next frontier, not just for recreation, but for all kinds of development opportunities, and I think for good reason. These are the boathouses that have recently been completed both on the north and south side. But what we have been working on, which I think is exciting as well, one of our major planning initiatives is called the River Ideas Lab, which we are doing to extend this momentum further south to Pingtown Park, 1.8 miles along the south branch of the river. And what it is a visioning exercise to get ideas to address how buildings relate to the river's edge, underbridge connections to keep that connectivity that we see downtown, and how we incorporate the major parcels of vacant land along the way. It's supported by the Driehaus Foundation, Comcast, and the Metropolitan Planning Council through its Great Rivers initiatives. And the architects that are participating are some of the top in the world: David Adige, Perkins and Will, Ross Barney, SOM, Studio Gang, James Corner, who is the architect of the High Line, Site Design and SWA. All of this will be rolled out at our own exhibit at the Chicago at the Architectural Biennial this fall. So look for that. We have our own space. More to come on that later. But this is something that we think is very important so that we have a cohesive view of how the river can really be integrated into the overall vision of the city. So moving on the river, we'll update a few things and talk about some of the projects that we see. The old post office, we talked about a little bit a year ago, a $500 million rehab. We have under agreement and consent decree with the owner, is moving along with initial occupancy still expected to occur sometime next year, with thousands of jobs for new media and technology firms, also traditional corporate tenants. The ongoing work at Riverline, a $1.5 billion project with CMK and Lendlease, 14 acres of vacant land with 6 acres of open space, 62 construction jobs over 10 years. And then, of course, the 62 acres that the mayor referenced, And as you can see, we start having a little bit of an image of what it can be from Related. Last year, we just showed the vacant land. And when I was here last year, it was actually that day that Related had finally secured site control of the parcel. We are now working forward. Today, we've begun the initial planning. I don't know how big it could be. I think it could be great. It could be $2 billion, $3 billion, $4 billion of investment. And that's just for that, for taxes and the opportunities for the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund. The role it can play in extending the river south, the direct connection between downtown and Chinatown, and reinforcing Roosevelt Road. And again, more investments that we've made that maximize our ability and our role as a city. Convention and tourism industry is critical to the lifeblood of Chicago. We had over 50 million visitors last year. We have two major investments which are coming online later this year, the Marriott Marquis and the Wintrust Arena. And we talk a lot about $55 million in TIF that went into the hotel. But the bottom line is that triggered $600 million of investment, annual property taxes, and the role that this can play in securing our tourism and convention business moving forward, not to mention the construction and permanent jobs, our role and in helping support this, what we put into Motor Row as a new entertainment district where we hope that we can revitalize that in connection with the other activities in McCormick Square and other areas. So all of these near south investments have set the stage for another one of the big six, which is Michael Reese. And as the mayor noted, we announced the selected developer last week. This is about 50 acres of land plus 28 acres of the marshalling yards controlled by MPEA. We chose Farpoint Development, who will lead this development, which will be probably up to 10 million square feet of logistics space, tech campus, commercial and retail buildings, residential and hotel uses, generate tens of thousands of jobs over 10 years. Very important local partners like McLaurin, Loop Capital, Draper and Kramer, Chicago Neighborhood Initiative, Skidmore, Owings and Merrill, Johnson and Lee. It is a true city team trying to realize this vision, but also will connect to all the other things we've talked about, making this part of Bronzeville, connecting it to the lakefront for the first time in generations, and reestablish this part of the South Side as an amenity for the entire city. Now, I do have one more project I want to talk about, but I just want to kind of bring this together with what I think is the vision of we have a strong downtown core. We have these tremendous opportunities of these sites that ring the city, which will allow us to compete with other cities for global economic activity, large redevelopment sites where we will be prepared to address the types of environments that 21st century jobs will want as we move out to Michael Reese, the 62 acres, the post office, Finkel, the areas in the North Branch. All of these sites together give us tremendous momentum to create resources both for the city and the core, but also for our neighborhoods as well. And then moving further south as we continue, the last project I'll talk about is, in conclusion, the Obama Presidential Center. This is a major investment in Chicago, a major opportunity, high profile. We're all very proud to honor the president from Chicago. This is a $500 million to $1.5 billion project. I guess that will depend on the day, and I can't tell you which one it is. Designed by Todd Williams and Billy Sien, top architects in these types of institutions. Landscaping by Michael Van Valkenburg, who is the designer of the 606 and Maggie Daly Park. And the center projects, the foundation projects, in the first 10 years, it'll have 7 million visitors and $2 billion of contribution to our economy. But the story doesn't really stop there. And to maximize the impact as part of equitable development, the same concepts we've been talking about, we are working with community partners to form an innovative advisory group that will lead, implement, and coordinate inclusive development, not just in the vicinity of Jackson Park, but throughout Woodlawn, Washington Park, and South Shore. And we're collaborating with the Obama Foundation, the Washington Park Consortium, the Network of Woodlawn, Chicago Community Trust, the University of Chicago, the Mayor's Office, the Department of Planning and Development, the Department of Transportation, all of these groups, local partners, the four aldermen, to come up with an advisory group that can help guide equitable development and whose principles are to cultivate growth that benefit the residents who live in the area now, even as other development occurs. Achieve early success prior to construction that will help generate that momentum, and to build capacity through key collaborations with existing organizations. It'll be an incredible addition to Chicago. So I want to thank you for your time and your patience. I know it was long, but I think it's a vision that and really only skims the surface. I only keep adding things to this. I never take anything away.
Wow. That was something else. Okay, we have time for a few questions. Are there any questions? Over here. Sir, you. Oh, you're a reporter. Listen.
She can talk to me separately.
David spoke at about, you know, the average human being all across the world speaks at a rate of 200 words a minute. We're going to have to sit down because we may have broken the record. And I would like to recognize, before we go any further, David's son is here, visiting from St. Olaf's College, Evan Reifman. Evan? Reifman, sorry. Okay, this question is from City Club member Stella Black. What is the criteria for selecting what streets have bike lanes? It's my understanding that my crowded street, you know, all politics are local, makes it a big bicycle lane now.
Well, I'm sorry you missed Commissioner Sheinfeld's presentation. She's right there, and you can ask her afterwards.
This is from Jill Zwick, City Club member, right over here. David, can you be more specific re-open space at Finkel Steel? Playing fields, a bridge perhaps, other much-needed open space for current residents?
Well, this is a theme we've addressed on numerous occasions in this process. We have developed a framework plan for the North Branch. The North Branch framework plan is not a traditional plan where we say this goes here and this goes there, but it identifies various principles and various ways that open space and transit improvements should be addressed. So it does show various areas, both in the public realm and on private development, where open space and things like parks, recreational fields, river trails, all of these different amenities, the different types of open space can be addressed. We don't address it specifically as to the location, and the commitment is at least 10 acres of recreational fields in addition of the 50 of the 60 total acres. Bridges, we have identified what we think are the key locations for things like pedestrian bridges based on abutments, locations, streets. All those things are in the plan. I flashed the slide real quickly, but we have given a lot of thought to it. Understand, what we're doing with the framework plan is setting the baseline. The owners of those properties, the owner of Finkel, the owner of the other sites, will come in and do their own rezonings and petition and go through the normal plan development process. And that's the point at which some of these details will be finalized. But the overall framework and baseline is set.
Okay, thank you. This question is from Mike Rolfs with Renew Chicago. Mike, where are you? Well, he's somewhere out there. Any updates on the U.S. Steel site?
The U.S. Steel site's a privately owned site. They selected a developer. It was in Cranes. I don't think I'm speaking out of school, called Barcelona Housing Services. I'm not sure exactly where they are. They're working out their private deal. We've met with them initially. I think there's a lot of work to do on that. I don't really have a significant update right now, which is one of the reasons I didn't include it, because it is one of the big six. Right now, I don't have a ton of information about where that's going and how viable that is. I'm optimistic, but I don't know.
Okay. I see that we have no more questions, so David, let's give David another round of applause.